Home Revision Commission, Tuesday, June 17, 1969, Room 315, Capitol Building. Today's agenda, minutes of February 22, 1969, minutes of March 20, 1969. Kidnapping and related offenses, preliminary draft number 4. Forgery and related offenses, amendments to preliminary draft number 2. Purposes and principles of construction, preliminary draft number 1. General definitions, preliminary draft number 2. General principles of criminal liability.
I could have used air conditioning in my bedroom last night.
No, I bet so.
The clerk will take notice of the attendance. And Don, what's the first thing that we need here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have two sets of minutes from previous commission meetings, just for the formality of...
Have they, oh yes.
February 22nd and March 20th.
Will they be approved?
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection? If not, the minutes of February 22nd and March 20th will be approved.
No.
The next item, apparently, is Article 2, kidnapping. Didn't we have that? Oh, we couldn't agree on it, could we?
Yes, this was sent back to subcommittee from the March meeting of the commission.
Who was the chairman at that time of the subcommittee 2?
Representative Carson.
Carson, yes.
Who else was on that committee?
Bill Carson was the chairman, but he hadn't been the chairman.
Yeah, that's right. You see, we'd had a whole changeover of personnel on that subcommittee that considered kidnapping. And he was chairman, Representative Carson was chairman at the time. We considered this in the commission. But that subcommittee had not worked on that themselves. The previous members of that subcommittee, Senator Mahoney was chairman, and Representatives Redden and Howe were members.
So we're facing the same situation we did then. Well, Don, why don't you lead the discussion then?
Now, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to digress just for a minute before we get into that and mention this booklet that we have obtained from the American Bar Association. Now, about 8 of you have already received copies of this through the subcommittees. This is the approved draft of the sentencing alternative and procedures formulated by the American Bar Association project on minimum standards for criminal justice. And this booklet, I think, is going to be extremely helpful to the commission in its work on sentencing and alternatives of the court. We get into that. Our timetable hopefully will allow us to get into that by the end of the summer. And this draft from the Bar Association contains an excellent comparison and analysis of the Model Sentencing Act and the Model Penal Code provisions. So those of you who have these in front of you, we have your name attached to them. If you'll just take those with you, and you can study those at your leisure. All right.
It's a discussion, isn't it? It isn't a draft of a proposed, it's an analysis of the
Well, it also contains some draft minimum standards that have been promulgated by the Bar Association.
Mm-hmm. Pretty well follows the Model Sentencing Act.
Yes, it's very, very similar. Yes.
Oh, I see. It has a New York and a Model Penal Code and several of them in it. Pennsylvania.
Yes, those are set out in the appendix.
Yeah.
Most of the analysis is devoted to the Model Sentencing Act and the Model Penal Code.
Yeah, that should be worthwhile. Fellas, at least read the heavy black print
on the cover.
The headings.
All right, now. With respect to
point of subcommittee, Don, report on that.
With respect to the kidnapping draft that appears in your books as preliminary draft number 4, now the commission had before it at the March meeting on March 20th the preliminary draft number 3, and this draft today represents quite a departure from that draft. we have attempted to incorporate the suggestions and amendments that were suggested by the commission in March. And in so doing, we've pretty well scrapped at least the form of the previous draft. The substance, we think, the basic rationale of kidnapping, we've tried to retain. As you'll probably recall, on preliminary draft number 3, our first section in that draft was, as is this draft, devoted to definitions. Now, that's where we had most of our difficulty, I felt, with the previous draft, was some confusion in the use of these terms that we attempted to define. Now, the previous draft was built around the basic definitions of restrain and abduct. And abduct, by reference, incorporated the definition of restrain. And this evidently caused us some problem. And we have tried to eliminate that in this draft. Now, we still have, in Section 1, 3 definitions. Now, Sub 1 defines without consent. Now, that was defined in Section 1 before. As meaning a restraint is without consent when accomplished by physical force, intimidation, or deception, or any means including acquiescence of the victim if he is a child who has not yet reached his 16th birthday, or an incompetent person, and the parent, guardian, or other person having lawful control or custody of him has not acquiesced in the movement or confinement. Now, the definition in preliminary draft number 4 defines it as that it means that the taking or confinement is accomplished by force, threat, or deception. Or, in the case of a person who has not reached his 16th birthday, who is otherwise incapable of giving consent. And the commentary on page 2 of your draft talks about our use of this language and points out that that the definition is similar to our previous definition, except that this phrase, an incompetent person and the parent, guardian, or other person having lawful control or custody of him has not acquiesced in the movement or confinement, has been deleted and been replaced by the new language, who is otherwise incapable of giving consent, that the taking or confinement is accomplished by the consent of his lawful custodian. And in so doing, we've deleted an incompetent person. The commission discussed that at length in March, and there was some question as to whether or not we were talking about mentally incompetent, or were we requiring a judicial declaration of incompetence, or that this includes physical and include physical incompetence. And it seemed to me what we were trying to get at was whether or not the victim had the capability of consenting. So that's the main purpose of this change, using the term incapable, that we're trying to focus upon the issue of whether the person, either because of mental incompetency or any other disability, is unable to effectively consent to the taking or confinement. Now, I have not defined incapable. It's intended to be used in its ordinary dictionary manner, and it's defined in Webster's as meaning lacking in capacity, ability, or qualification, incompetent, unqualified, lacking legal qualification or power, disqualified, or ineligible. And we felt that this would be broad enough to include not only mental incompetence, so whether they were declared so by a court or not, but whether any other type of incapacity on the part of the victim. In subsection 2, lawful custodian has been defined. This did not appear in our definitions in the previous draft. It's been defined herein as meaning a parent, guardian, or other person responsible by authority of law for the care, custody, or control of another. Now, this would include, of course, not only a parent or a guardian or but also would include, for example, the superintendent of the state hospital, a person who has legal responsibility to care for another person because of that person's incompetence.
Who would be, Don, who would be the lawful custodian of an 18 or 21-year-old person who is deaf, dumb, blind, and crippled, and he was taken?
You mean in the absence of any sort of a court order?
Yeah. Oh, I see. This, of course, this applies only to those who have not reached the 16. But say someone who has not reached. No, it doesn't either.
Or is otherwise incapable of giving consent.
Or who, yeah, is otherwise incapable.
Right.
So who would be the lawful custodian in that situation?
Well, I don't know who he would be, Mr. Chairman. In the absence of a court order, but I think the issue would still be the same, whether or not that person is capable of giving consent. And it seemed to me that our definition under sub 1, or who is otherwise incapable, you don't get to the issue of consent by a custodian if you didn't have one.
Then you would be facing the question of whether or not the taking or confinement was accomplished by force, threat, or deception. And the lawful custodian wouldn't come into it, and these physical deficiencies that the person had would be taken into consideration in determining whether or not there was or was not consent. So I think it's probably all right on that.
Of course, you wouldn't have to exercise much force in a case like that.
No. What does ancestor mean? Is that a word of art?
Well, I suppose that means if you're living with grandma or your mother-in-law.
Yes, it would include a grandparent.
It would have to be someone
lineal,
parent or behind, wouldn't it?
It defined in the probate code?
I don't think so. It's not a, that's what I was wondering. Why don't we use the language out of the probate code?
I don't know that it's necessary. Parents included, brother is, sister is, uncle or aunt. Now, ancestor, you'd be getting into grandparents, great-grandparents, great-uncle, great-aunts, wouldn't you?
And of course,
the only purpose of it is to establish a defense, isn't it?
Well,
the only purpose of this particular definition.
Yes, this applies under sections 4 and 5 under custodial interference.
Yeah, this is just to keep. This is not. You don't have to get grandma permission to kidnap somebody. It's to keep grandma from going to jail when she goes over and picks up the kid.
What we're trying to do is keep the less serious. Family squabbles out of the courts, the criminal courts,
or at least on this chart.
Yes, as far as this, but
well, that's what I was wondering about section 4 and 5. Whether we aren't getting into really matter more appropriately civil criminal.
Well, I don't think so. The way we've restricted it, because we've attempted to only zero in on the more serious types of. Interferences where there's been for an intent to withhold the child permanently from his lawful custodian, or if there's some risk to the person taken because of illness or injury and this type of thing.
But the civil remedy really isn't any remedy when you got cited to appear to show cause and stuff, and when the father has got a 2-month-old baby and the mother is just screaming her head off, and so she has to fight him and cite him in to appear and show cause why she's killed him.
And where for a couple $100 he can be in Paris.
It's a much softer approach than our existing law on taking away a child with intent to detain. Yeah.
charge?
I certainly see the reason, I think I see the reason why Section 5 might be defined code as a crime, where especially in the subsection 2 exposes that person to substantial risk of illness or physical injury, but I think I'm inclined to agree that respect to just the taking of the child where there's no injury intended or likely to happen, that this perhaps is a place where we can remove a criminal sanction, and I think that's the general thrust that we've agreed on from the very beginning, that wherever possible, we should remove from the definition of crime those areas that could be handled civilly, although evidently, I'm not aware, I'm not thoroughly familiar with the background, but evidently the courts have not been able to cope with this kind of a problem because of crossing the state lines. Can someone comment on the depth of that problem with respect to enforcing the court decree as a civil matter?
Well, I think many of these cases involve people who don't have the funds with which to hire an attorney in California or Arizona or Utah where the child's been taken to enforce a custody decree in another state.
So we're using the criminal law then to enforce what essentially is a civil matter, and I think we should put the flag up here and see if that we really mean to do that.
Well, this is another, I mean, you see, I don't quite see where the criminal law even really does the job anyway. I mean, what is it really, does it add that much?
I think it adds quite a bit. You advise your client.
I do too.
To the office and he says, I don't care what the court says, I'm going to take that money, I'm going to California. And you advise your client that if he does that, they have one maybe extra time for that. I've had clients that was the only thing.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Speaking to that point, which I think is a compelling reason to keep this, I think I wonder about the grading of these and whether, if, for example, custodial interference in the second degree was a misdemeanor, then it wouldn't be an extraditable offense. So. Does it not then weaken the law more than what we presently have? I can only put it in perspective by recalling that I think in 1963 I filed the first criminal charge against Ralph Lemon, and it was, who has become well known since then, but there was a divorce, the mother had custody of the child. He's a very erratic, emotionally irresponsible person. He kidnapped a six-year-old child and took her to Arizona. And we filed first-degree kidnapping against him and extradited him and brought him back. Now, maybe he shouldn't have been...
That was a mistake.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't have brought him back. Maybe we shouldn't have charged him with first-degree kidnapping, but it was an extraditable offense, and he was brought back across the state line, and the child was returned to its mother. If this were second-degree... and it was a misdemeanor, it couldn't be extradited, right?
Well, yes, we talked about this problem in the subcommittee. And, of course, now we have interference with the custody of, or child stealing is really what it's commonly called. And it's an extraditable offense also. And in the subcommittee, we felt that second degree would be graded as a misdemeanor. And first degree would be graded as a felony, so that there would be some criminal sanction that could be applied mainly for the purposes of extradition without going to a kidnapping charge.
If you take them across the state line, you know, first degree custodial interference, you
could. How about this? You get having the reason to know that he has no legal right to do so.
Well, now, you're not on sub one now.
Oh, no. We're here at four.
You're hot.
We're on section four.
We're hot on section four.
We're talking about what relatives
are. We'll probably should be on
section
five.
Five.
Which is my place for one.
Well, why don't we keep this in order a little bit? Now, I think as we get into the degrees, let's, if there isn't anything further on section one, we can come back to it, of course. Let's go to section two.
I think the only point I would make, Mr. Chairman, is I think when we get to four, the that's where relative applies.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it also applies in two.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll apply in two from the standpoint of a defense. Now, on still in section one, subsection three, the suggestion was made that we should. I believe it was Mr. Spaulding, if I'm not mistaken, at the commission meeting suggested, or maybe it was Judge Burns, inquired as to whether or not we needed any reference to an adoptive parent. And I agree with him that, or an adoptive relative, that I don't really think that that's essential to the definition of relative. So that has been removed. It's commented on page two. I think where this is going to come into play is in the question in the case of an adoptive relative, an adoptive parent. And under Oregon law, of course, an adoptive parent stands in the same position as a natural parent. So
I think that's a good deletion.
So we've changed that, eliminated any reference to an adoptive parent.
Does the model penal code have adoptive?
In here.
I was wondering if the issue
seems to me it does.
I wonder if the issue that was trying to be faced there was when the natural parent tries to take custody from the legal parent.
No, the natural parent, of course, if you've got an adopted parent, well, the natural parent has no rights left, does it?
Doesn't have legal rights.
No. He doesn't. He's just. He may feel it in his heart, but he doesn't have any standing.
But that would still have an effect. Say, if you had a situation where you had an adoptive parent, the legal or the natural parent comes on the scene and takes that child away with the intent to detain them from the adoptive parent. Our definition of relative would be important to this person from the standpoint of the defense that's set out here under section 2.
Just a degree, though.
Yeah. Section 2 embodies the same rationale that we had in our earlier drafts on kidnapping. We do not use either of the terms that gave us difficulty before, the term abduct nor the term restraint. Both of those have been eliminated. However, the definitions of those terms have been retained in the definitive statement of the crime. For example, looking at our earlier draft, the definition of restrain incorporated some of the same language we have under Section 2 now. Restrain was defined as meaning to intentionally restrict a person's movement in such a manner as to interfere substantially with his liberty. Crime of kidnapping in the second degree is defined in our draft now under subsection 1 as a person commits the crime of kidnapping in the second degree if with intent to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty. Personal is a new modifying word that we've added to this, feeling that it was more precise because there are several kinds of liberty. And what we're really talking about is the personal liberty of this person, and not his political liberty or anything else. But without consent or legal authority, he takes the person from one place to another, or secretly confines the person in a place where he's not likely to be found.
Does the courts define the word liberty?
Pardon me?
Courts define the word liberty
several ways, I'm sure.
Every decision.
Yeah, it's well, all of the kidnapping cases.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court even defined it yesterday in the Powell case.
Yeah.
That's what I wondered about.
Well, apparently, it's been clear, I think, in Miranda, where the word liberty is used to define a harder word to define, custody. Apparently, they consider it to be a pretty clear meaning.
Now, subsection 1B secretly confines a person in a place where he's not likely to be found. is language that appeared earlier in preliminary draft number three as part of the definition of abduct, which was abduct means to restrain a person with the intent to prevent his liberation by either A, secreting or holding him in a place where he's not likely to be found, or using or threatening to use deadly physical force. Now, the reference to deadly physical force in the definition in our earlier draft was important because the term abducts was used within the statement of the crime of kidnapping in the first degree.
He is not likely to be found. Is that any clear at all? Is that pretty well taken care of?
That becomes a question of fact, I guess.
Do you like the definition of receiving concealing stolen property? Concealing simply means making it harder for you to find it. And it seems to be a workable definition of that.
Now, subsection 2 in section 2 sets out a defense to kidnapping in the second degree. And here it's restricted to a victim or a person who is taken or confined who has not yet reached his 16th birthday. And the defendant is a relative of that person, as that term relative is defined in section 1. And his sole purpose is to assume control of the person. Now, the intent here is to provide a defense only in those cases where there aren't some aggravating factors involved. Now, if the defendant has some other motive, such as an intent to terrorize the mother or something like that, or if some other aggravating factor, or if he's not a relative. If all three of these things have to coexist in order for this defense to be available, but the defense only applies to second degree. Now, if anything else comes into play that would aggravate it, it wouldn't lie as a defense to kidnapping in the first degree, for example.
Don, wasn't your purpose on this to, in effect, define section 4, custodial interference in second degree,
yeah,
as your defense? And I'm wondering if you've done it when you've got sub C of his sole purpose is to assume control of that person, and the wording used in section 4, the custodial interference, is with the intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period. Is that the same as assuming custody or assume control? I'm wondering if it'd be better to use the wording that we would use in section 4 if we keep it.
In C.
In C, right. To make it, in effect, we're trying to take away from kidnapping in second degree the crime defined in section 4 of custodial interference.
Supposing an aunt of a 6-year-old boy is dissatisfied with the way that the mother and father are taking care of that child and takes the child to her own home, restrains him there, no force used, then it would not be kidnapping in the second degree. It would be custodial interference. Yes, because it's a relative and the sole purpose is to assume control.
Right.
And the person hadn't reached the 16th birthday. Or suppose that, on the other hand, that the aunt did that and she wanted to assume control of that boy for a period of 1 hour when she had someone there that some other relative of hers she wanted the boy to meet.
Well, I don't think that would be custodial interference in second degree.
What if she wanted to assume control of him forever?
Well, I think that then you'd get into your section 4, custodial interference.
Well, that's what I mean. It would be custodial interference, but in that situation it would not be under kidnapping in the second degree, would it?
No. And what we're trying to do with this language, to hold him permanently or for a protracted period, was to try to keep out of the DA's office the situation where the child is on a visitation, he's supposed to be back Friday night, and he's not returned until Tuesday morning, and this kind of thing.
All right, Don.
Wait a minute. How about the words legal authority up in the subsection 1? Does it? I wonder if that doesn't cover the defense.
Those were words that were in the definition of restrained in the third draft, and you put them in here, is this right?
Yes, they've been taken out of the definition section and made a part of the statement of the crime.
With intent?
Well, isn't this defense designed to protect people that have a legal authority to assume control of the child?
No, because the aunt wouldn't have any legal authority to take the child to feel it wasn't being fed or anything else.
The person has legal authority doesn't need any defense.
Yeah.
You're not going to be charged anyway.
Now, Don, I mentioned that the aunt who wanted to, who took this child for a period of 1 hour, clearly that aunt wouldn't be guilty of kidnapping in the second degree. And under sub 1 of section 4, custodial interference in the second degree, she would not be guilty of custodial interference in the second degree because that would not be permanent or protracted period, that 1 hour. But she would come under, because it's or, under sub 2, knowing or having reason to know that he has no legal right to do so, he takes, entices, or keeps a person from his lawful custodian. In that case, there isn't any period of time involved, so that aunt situation for 1 hour would come under sub 2 of custodial interference, wouldn't
it? No, because relative isn't included under sub 2. Sub 2 is intended to take care of the minor cases of custodial interference not involving a relative.
In that situation, then, this aunt wouldn't be guilty of either one of the two?
No.
Where would she come in under section, under...
She wouldn't come in.
She wouldn't come in anything, would she?
She wouldn't be committing any crime under this draft.
No.
Well, the question is, should she?
I don't think she should.
I don't think so either. The problem, of course,
are
is...
Are you sure that the
order to find a protection
for
Korea?
Pardon me?
Well, she would come under 4-2.
Yeah, she would. Because there's nothing in there that accepts the relative.
She knows that she has no legal right to do so, and she takes and keeps the child from his lawful custodian.
That's what my impression was.
And she sure would come within that.
Permanently or for a protracted period?
No, that's one. But
no.
Two, there's no
time.
There's no time.
Limiting not being a relative, knowing or having reason to know he's no legal right or something.
I don't understand. Pardon me, I don't understand what 2 is designed to protect against.
Well, it was designed to protect against a non-relative who takes a child from his lawful custodian, but there are no aggravating...
No, I'm talking about subsection 2 of 2.
Subsection
of section 4?
Two.
Oh.
I think the purpose of that is to incorporate section 4.
That's to
get the kid's parents problem out of the
It's to keep them out of the kidnapping in the second degree.
Yeah.
Keep the
otherwise,
family.
When the father who doesn't have custody takes the child, you'd be charging him under second degree kidnapping, you see.
But I'm not entirely certain we've done that. Because of the difference in definition.
Well, I think you eliminate him from kidnapping in the second degree, which was the purpose, whether you've made him given him some problems under 4 is a different matter, really.
Well,
really, the purpose of this is to...
It's not a different matter if you're trying to define another offense as a defense to a more serious one. And if we haven't done it, we haven't accomplished the purpose, I don't think.
Well, actually, the purpose of sub 2 of section 2, kidnapping in the second degree, is not, really, it's not related to subsection 4 at all, I mean section 4 at all.
Well,
it says it is a defense to a prosecution under subsection 1, that's kidnapping in the second degree. If. So it is only to provide a defense against kidnapping in the second degree.
Yeah. But isn't the intent of that defense to mean that while this is something that should be criminally sanctioned, it shouldn't have quite as strong a penalty as kidnapping in the second degree?
Well,
and there would therefore fall under the misdemeanor of custodial interference.
Not necessarily.
No,
at this point, as you read section 2, and I think that should be its sole function. As you read section 2, the only purpose of sub 2 is to take,
to negate
kidnapping in the second
right.
degree, to take it out of that category. Then if we want to see that similar conduct could be a criminal offense under section 3 or 4 or 5, we have to look at those sections. Isn't that correct, Don?
Yes. Don, why is 16?
We went all through that
one.
Yeah.
We went through this a number of times, and of course, it's an arbitrary figure. I think any of these ages when you're deciding what your cutoff date should be, to a certain extent, is an arbitrary.
But you're between 16 and 18, you're saying that child would have some say in the matter? Is that what?
point is, or what?
At least more able physically to resist.
A child who's 16 years old, right, to say, well, I want to go live with daddy, and then let the court decide if the mother wants to come in and cite it for contempt to get custody back. Given that child the opportunity to say, well, I would rather go live with my aunt, I'd rather go live with my father back than my mother or something. But of course, if the father came and took, even a 17-year-old without consent, I mean, you were actually kidnapped, and then we'd be back in this, come within the criminal definition.
Now, guess that you've got a problem here. This is a defense. Even if you secretly confine the place in a place where it is not likely to be found.
It'd be a defense to kidnapping in the second degree because a relative is involved, and we didn't feel that where relatives are involved, it should rise to the dignity of that serious an offense. It would still be liable to prosecution as custodial interference. Is this right?
It won't be an offense under first degree kidnapping.
Well, yeah, I understand that. It seems to me that the purpose of the relative in this sort of thing is to... we're against kidnapping because somebody's liable to be hurt one way or the other. I don't like kidnapping because somebody's going to be physically injured or somebody else is going to have to dispose of his property to get him back or something else. And a relative is unlikely to engage in this sort of activity. Certainly... may get knocked off in a car accident going someplace, but that's one of those things that happens, whether a person being kidnapped or custodial, whatever it is. I try to read this as this section 2 is only a defense against this particular crime. This is not a matter that carries over and we worry about it two sections later. It's if all three of these circumstances, if the crime otherwise would fit the kidnapping in the second degree category, and all three of these individual circumstances are present, then the guy can still be charged, but he's got an automatic defense.
And it's
pardon. Go ahead.
And practically, it's what happens. A mother comes to the district attorney, to Frank, and says, "My child's." My boy's aunt, on his father's side, took my boy and kept it for 4 hours this afternoon. What is Frank going to do? He's not going to charge that relative with kidnapping in the second degree. And I think it's realistic this way.
These arise in two ways.
You didn't transfer the venue to Frank, can
you? One's a question of... one's a custody fight.
Yeah.
And the other is a family fight. Where the mother doesn't like the aunt, never has liked her, and think, well, now I'll get even with her.
Right. What we were trying to do is keep the run-of-the-mill family custody squabbles out of the DA's office, but recognizing there are times, though, when there are other motivations that there are other reasons why somebody's going to want to steal a child. At the same time, that there's another consideration as we get into some of these other sections. For example, as we spoke about custodial interference in the first degree, that I think that you get into these problems where the child maybe isn't endangered, but he's been removed from the state. And
well, you're not going to keep him out of the DA's office.
No.
They're going to be there crying.
Well, they'll be there, but you'll have something to say to them.
Well, at least. At least you'll be nonpartisan, and they can't blame you if they don't agree with you. Don, I have another question, and that relates to this defense as it relates to Section 3. And I haven't completely thought this out, but just let me spell it out, and maybe as I talk, the answer will come to me. The defense, Section 2 is a defense only, or Sub 2 is a defense only to sub 1 of section 2. All right, now, in order to commit first degree kidnapping, you have to violate section 2. All right, so will we have problems? Because somebody can assert that, well, I didn't really commit, or I really didn't violate subsection 1 of section 2 because I had a defense to that. Therefore, it doesn't bring into play the prime requisite for the commission of first degree kidnapping because I didn't really violate section 2.
May I say something about that? In answer to that, it seems to me, though, you see you have other purposes under section 3, first degree kidnapping.
But the condition preceding is a violation of section 2 in the first instance.
Yeah. But in order for that defense to exist under second degree, the sole purpose must have been to assume control of that purpose. Now you turn to section 3, first degree, and if the purpose was to compel any person to pay or deliver money or property as ransom, the sole purpose would not have been to assume control.
Is that not in addition, though, to a violation of section 2?
The same thought occurred to me, but as I read it, you first look at section 2 and say, is there a defense to sub 1? Well, there is to that, if these defenses occur, if these three items coexist. Then, as you look at 1, you have to first determine, was there a violation of section 2? Well, there was not a violation of section 2 if it was a relative, if it was under the age of 16, and the sole purpose was to assume control of the person. Now, whenever you prove that the purpose was to compel ransom or to hold a victim as a shield or hostage or to cause serious physical injury to the victim or to terrorize the victim or another person, they have not complied with the third with C.
Because that negates the sole purpose.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think that should be clearly reflected in the minutes, legislative history, because it's obviously...
That was our feeling in the subcommittee, that C...
So that it could be pointed out to the judge sometime the way Tony has here, then get them to understand it.
We felt in subcommittee that C would automatically fall by the wayside if any of the things would take them to first degree existence.
I agree. But what Tony said had to be said so that it'll be clear in the record.
All right. We on 3 now?
Yes.
I'm a little bothered by purpose. It seems to me that it might be unnecessarily confining. I know it's difficult to judge intent, but...
Well, isn't purpose synonymous with reason, really? Supposing this said for any of the following reasons.
We've used purpose
before. Isn't purpose the same? And yeah, we have.
I know we have. And it seems that, at least in my view of the meaning of purpose, it seems to define that to require more thought and planning than I want to ascribe sometimes.
What if he takes the guy and doesn't plan to do any of these things, but ends up doing it? It's going to have a...
it's implied.
Pretty strong
influence. But where would the conduct
of
the woman intend to rape
her
fall? To cause serious
physical
injury.
Or to terrorize.
Well, 4, it could fall under 4.
Or it would be rape.
Yeah.
I
just
there, Jake, simplifying things again.
Well, no, Jake's got a good point, because that was going way back to the first draft on kidnapping. This was one of the main purposes, if you'll excuse the use of the word, one of the main purposes of the approach we took to kidnapping, and that is we wanted to avoid any use of kidnapping as a substitute for some other crime.
Assault.
That if it's robbery, it's the guy's committing robbery and not kidnapping.
No,
it's not how it
ends.
If it's rape, it's rape.
Adjustment was right. Male kidnapping, taking a girl from one car to another.
I think, Bob, what you had in mind, if it would read something like this, if he violates section 2 of the of this article and any of the following result. One, he attempts to compel any person. Two, he holds victim of so-and-so. He threatens to cause serious injury or harm, or terrorizes the victim or another person. I mean, if those things happen, that's what Don's getting at, isn't
it? I'm more interested in looking at what happens than the guy come and say, well, I didn't intend to do any of these.
Well, I think to answer that, Bob, if he proved that there was a demand for money for a ransom,
Well, that's right, but what about to cause serious physical injury?
Well, I think if
pretty rare that somebody is kidnapped with the intent or purpose of causing serious physical injury outside of the...
But if you prove that serious injuries occurred...
Well, California comptroller was champion down there. Yeah. Of course, you would have had the subsection 2 to hold the victim as a shield or hostage. But I don't think they had the intention that he would be received physical injury, and yet he was tried under that.
Well, are you worried, Bob, because you think purpose implies intent?
Yeah.
And that it...
That some of these things could happen when you could defend on the ground that you didn't intend it was an accident they have outside of your control.
So, you turn it around, Bob, it's just the other side of the coin, because what if he took him with the intention to do this, and the fact that he didn't accomplish his intention to inflict serious physical injury shouldn't be shielded.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question, Mr. Chairman, and that is, on the early drafts of this, we had one of these criteria to facilitate the commission of any felony or flight thereafter. That was an optional provision. Why did we delete that?
Well, that was...
We're going to make it, if you kidnap somebody with the intent to facilitate the commission of a felony, we're going to make it first degree kidnapping. So we decided to delete it, and I can't...
Yeah, the reason that was deleted, the subcommittee felt that it was redundant in light of the language about holding the victim as a shield or a hostage, that they felt particularly shield.
You're talking about the prison guard situation or something of this sort.
You're talking about getting the banker's daughter wife and saying, okay.
Taking the teller with you when you leave the bank.
Yeah.
Meet me down at the bank, or meet my partner down at the bank, because we've got your wife.
Now, the other states that we looked at have a separate subsection on that, but the subcommittee didn't feel that it was needed because they felt that a person committing a felony who grabs a bystander is using that person as a shield.
Yeah, I recall it now.
And that even though that would facilitate the commission of the crime, that the use of that person as a shield would be covered by subsection 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may be assuming too much, I don't know.
I don't think it is assuming too much. I think it's right.
Yeah. We couldn't really come up with any example of where the person wouldn't, in effect, amount to a shield.
I can't think of it.
Section 3, sub 3. I wonder why you use the qualifying word serious. Why is it necessary to intend to commit serious physical injury? Perhaps it shouldn't be sufficient if he intends to commit any physical injury.
Well, first, now we'll get to serious physical injury. Serious physical injury and physical injury are both defined in our general definitions.
Get to those today, won't we?
Physical injury is defined as meaning impairment of physical condition or substantial pain. So really, almost any kind of injury is going to amount to a physical injury under our definition of that term. And we felt that a minor kind of injury should not be sufficient to invoke a first degree penalty.
Well, what?
Smashing a finger in the car door.
What?
Smashing a finger in the car door.
That's serious.
What if, Don, What if you got a brutal situation? He kidnaps a young girl and he hangs her up by her wrists and burns her toes with a cigarette lighter. Now, and they run in and they catch him. Well, that would be, you'd probably come under the
terror. That would be rather terrifying, I would think.
All right.
Same if you got the kid in the, knocked him around a bit, but you'd still be terrorized.
Well, that raises Jim Burns' question in the last meeting as to whether or not we shouldn't define terrorize. What I'm thinking about, I think Jake raises a legitimate point, and I remember the wrangle that Bob and I and Bruce had in subcommittee on the definition of physical injury, because we say that physical injury by itself means impairment of physical condition or substantial pain, whereas serious physical injury means physical injury which creates a substantial risk of death or serious and protracted disfigurement. Well, you can have a substantial amount of pain short of creating a substantial risk of death, and I would think that there'd be situations where substantial pain could be inflicted, which would certainly make it first degree kidnapping.
It seems to me that any intention to do injury, whether it be physical, whether it be serious physical injury or minor physical injury, presents an equal danger to the victim. It's the kind of thing that brought him in. It's the kind of thing which makes abduction a very serious act.
And you don't think second degree kidnapping would be a stern enough charge?
Of course, it isn't going to take much physical injury to terrorize somebody. Particularly if he doesn't know what's coming next.
Well, I wonder though, if by stating this, whether you almost exclude something lesser. Whether it can be read as being that the criminal law revision commission does not mean to refer to this lesser sort of intent to injure.
Broken finger.
Yeah.
What you're saying, in effect, is what Jake's saying, that it doesn't take too much physical injury to terrorize. If it isn't serious, then you come to the terrorizing aspect of the thing. How about material or substantial or some other type?
And we've got to add another definition to our definition section.
Yeah. The fellow says, well, I'm going to take my victim out and I'm going to give him a couple of bruises. I hit him a couple of times, just give him a couple of bruises and not really scare him. Then he gets away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot more because you're in a situation where violence is occurring.
I think that's a good point.
But it seems that original intent is extremely dangerous. And I don't see why.
Well, suppose I kidnap somebody and I've got a mopper, which is a nice motherly type, and she just, the kid's a 5-year-old, and she just disciplines him.
That's not an intent to do physical injury at all.
Well, see, you got to commit the act of kidnapping, or you got to commit section 2 at least,
yeah.
Taking from one place to another, or secretly confine the person in place for the purpose, or you might as well say with the intent to compel any person to pay money or to hold him as a shield or hostage, or with the intent. Cause serious physical injury. So it means that the original taking would be with that intent, of course, in that approved.
Well, I think Jake raised another interesting point. Since we don't have second degree, since second degree doesn't speak to physical injury per se, could not a court read into this that we have no lesser included, and that if the state proves no serious physical injury, they wouldn't have a lesser included of second degree kidnapping to fall back to? Is that what you were saying?
No, I don't think
that's what Don perhaps was.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying that. No,
well,
suppose
you go to the problem of the person that meets the defense under subsection 2,
then do you try and, if you reduce it, reduce the serious, aren't you getting into the family problem?
No.
Suppose I and my wife are separated, and I go grab the kid and bring him home, and I do discipline him. I might well want to inflict some minor physical harm on him.
That's your sole purpose is to assume control of him, right? And you don't have any intent to cause injury to him, do you?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, when you took him, you intended to just...
That was one of the purposes for which you...
Is that the purpose for which you took him? Inflict the...
I suppose that I took him on the because I felt his mother wasn't properly disciplined.
I think that's ancillary to your intent, though. I think that's a different thing from having an intent to do injury.
It's not included in the words assume control. I mean, we're talking about a loco parentis type control, which would include normal discipline as well, as opposed to an intent to injure.
You know, if you drop the word serious here, really, all you're doing is you're just telling the DA he's got to use a little discretion here on invoking that, I think. I don't think you've got any problem with dropping it. I think you might have problems with leaving it in.
Well,
but you're giving, if you drop that, which I think we should, if you drop that, you're making it a little easier for the DA to prove his case, too. The fact that he intended to do serious injury could be quite a hurdle to overcome unless he comes into the terrorizing aspect of this. Another subsection.
Discipline the kid. I'm really trying to terrorize.
Well, but my question is though, if it's not a serious physical injury, and in some other factor that comes into play, such as the terrorizing feature, why aren't the provisions of second degree kidnapping sufficient to handle that kind of problem?
Well, I suppose we're looking into the future and seeing what sentences.
I mean, kidnapping. I would assume kidnapping in the first degree is going to be looked upon as one of the more serious of all of our crimes that we'll have in this code, that when you're going to aggravate a crime, there should be something serious about it to make it in the first degree.
Don, the hang-up that I have is with the expression of a substantial pain, and seems to me that. From a public policy standpoint, it's every bit as injurious to that defendant who's subjected to substantial pain as is a situation where the victim is held up to ransom.
It would seem to me that leaving serious out, if we go back to our definition of physical injury is. We've taken away from this the scratch on the finger business. It's an impairment of physical condition or substantial pain. Now that's a, by my standards, that's a serious, not by the legal standards or this definition standard, but that, as far as I'm concerned, that's serious. And I think most people would think that was
Don,
serious.
How much would it hurt to delete? I don't think it would hurt this to eliminate serious.
I'm not sure if you couldn't delete three. That's what the only thing is. I think we're really arguing.
Except at least it's a little
more precise. It's really, more, because what it is, the way it stands now, the one you'd usually go to would be four.
Except it is a little bit more precise than four.
Yeah.
A little bit scared of the
spells it out.
Well, I move that we delete. The word serious. Yeah.
Motion has been made to delete the word serious. In subsection 3. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
All right, now, with respect to number 4, do you want to talk about terrorize any further? I mentioned that in my commentary. As a drafting policy, I think that we shouldn't define terms that are used in their ordinary meanings.
Right.
We should keep our definitions as short as possible and only define those terms that we have to. And terrorize is well defined and has a clear meaning, and the model penal code indicated that they were talking about a vengeful or sadistic abduction, what they had in mind.
What are you worried about?
Perhaps we ought to include in the principles of construction which dictionary we use.
Don, I mentioned Webster's in here tonight.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, really. But generally speaking, so you have a basic dictionary that you've used to check these things.
That's a good point.
And Webster's, you know, everybody's got Webster's name. Every publisher has got.
Well, it's used throughout here, too, in commentaries.
We use it throughout, but you're using a particular edition of Webster's by a particular publisher, and I don't think it would be a bad idea somewhere to indicate that this is what we're talking about.
Well, that strikes me as a good kind of word for the court to have to wiggle around with a little bit in specific facts.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you've made the amendment, we've made it three, it becomes...
Don, before we leave section three,
we mentioned... Well, it's terrorized, evicted, or another.
Yeah.
So that's like if the father comes back and takes the child for the purpose of terrorizing the mother in some way, shape, or form, well then he's in the first degree, regardless of his relationship.
Yeah. The kid out over a ledge or something like that by a lake.
Or he calls her up on the phone and says, I'm going to kill him.
Hear that click?
Well, sure, you might have a small child or an infant that doesn't even know what's taking place.
Yeah.
It could be being held out of an airplane at 5,000 feet by its heels and not be aware of what's going on.
Probably scare the hell out of it.
Jonathan's flying it.
Better fly and drive.
Just get rid of me in an automobile.
I don't think I want to.
Are we ready to go to section four?
No, I
Dave has some comment.
I was curious, we mentioned it a little earlier, Don, I think we had an answer. Why are we using the word purpose rather than intent? Do we mean intent by purpose?
Well, yeah. This language was used from the beginning of this draft, and there's been no action up to now to change it. Now, it's... it's the kind of word that, the standpoint of the mens rea, we've used intent and intentionally in our definitions. And I think that's a good comment. I don't think that we do any harm to this draft. In fact, it might make it conform more with our other drafts to use intent rather than purpose.
Well, you're talking about still section three. With any of the following,
just purpose. Say with intent, colon.
Well, now, Don, as we've gone through all the drafts, we're trying to standardize our language, and we've used purpose in a number of instances, and have we used it synonymously with intent?
Not necessarily, though, but it could lead to some confusion. I wondered what George Plant thought about that.
Yeah, I was reacting to that a little bit. We don't use. Definition now of the degrees of culpability, you have decided to avoid the use of the word purpose or purposive action, and strictly you are now going with intent. If we use the word intent here, I was just trying to think, sort of thinking out loud as John was a while ago, could this crime be committed recklessly? That is, could one be reckless? What section is this? I lost my place here.
Section three.
You can't recklessly compel a person to pay or deliver money or terrorize.
Now, we've got to remember, though, that...
Well, it's possible. I don't know. Maybe you're right, but it's possible with respect to terrorization that this could be a conscious awareness but a disregarding
conscious
of
objective
the risk
cause
of the terror that might be created. And that would be within the word reckless as we define it in the levels of culpability.
That's right.
But actually, when you start using words like intent, you are using it as a word, as a term of art, which we can find elsewhere, and we ought to think about that. I'm not sure that would have the kind of implications which would make it ambiguous here, but it might.
Well, aren't we looking at the, really, what we're talking about, though, is the result not the intent or the purpose.
No, I was just going to say, I'm
talking about voting.
Really, our basic criminal intent here is to interfere substantially with another's liberty. I mean, that's set out as the mens rea in the statement of kidnapping in the second degree. And there we use the word intent, with intent to interfere substantially. So in order to commit first degree, he has to have that criminal intent that is set out in kidnapping the second degree, and that is to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty. So you've really kind of got an intent on top of an intent when you get into first degree.
Well,
and perhaps the word purposes is a better word to use there.
Purposes seems to be broader than intent, really. I mean, Bob's word about being limiting, but to me, it's broader than intent, but it's a purpose. Maybe they're almost synonymous.
Well, if you look back in the culpability definitions, intent says person acts with a conscious objective to cause the result or to engage in the conduct so described. And that's exactly what you're talking about here, Don. He's acting with a conscious objective to cause this result, to compel ransom or to hold a victim hostage or to cause physical injury. Now, in line with what we talked about earlier, particularly insofar as assault is concerned, that the thing that should be proscribed is the act, so to speak. That is to say, we don't need a completed act in order to commit the crime. Isn't this right? I'm a little bit foggy here, but assume that I kidnap somebody and the evidence is demonstrable that I did it for the purpose of compelling somebody else to deliver ransom. I made all the preparations. But somewhere along the line, something went awry. And the act wasn't completed. That is, I don't know what part of it. Have I still committed kidnapping in the first degree?
Well, under your attempt.
Well, we've got attempt. We have a general attempt statute. Maybe it's attempted kidnapping.
I would commit.
Well, I do too.
Just like burglary, once you've broken and entered with the intent to steal, you've completed the crime of burglary.
And under George's draft of definition of attempt, this would certainly amount to a substantial step toward the commission of the crime.
Yeah, undoubtedly, and this raises an issue that I was going to interject anyhow. My recommendation in the inchoate crimes article with respect to punishment follows the model penal code recommendations, and that is that the attempt would be punished, sanctioned, that is, by the same sanction that applies to the substantive or completed crime. Now, that would mean, in the case of kidnap in the first degree, if we follow again the model penal code pattern, and I assume most patterns elsewhere, this is one of the big three in the model penal code. Now, I think there are only three where a felony of the first degree is attached as a sanction. That is kidnapping by force, robbery with gunpoint, and of course the highest degree of homicide. So I think we ought to keep that in mind. Are we going to punish this in that pattern? That is the very most serious sanction that we can impose, and it's very rare. As I've said, in only three occasions that I know of. And this would then, of course, tie back with what Ben suggested about the attempt to sanction.
What?
In the back of our minds, how are we going to deal with the ultimate sentencing pattern here?
Well, George, this the sentencing perhaps may be different, but look, it would be ridiculous, in my opinion, if we were to say that this person who took somebody by force, violated Section 2, sent the ransom notes, the money was delivered to a third party, he places it at the post where they say, and then the defendant or the accused goes over to pick it up. The police grab him just before he does pick it up. It hasn't been paid to him, it hasn't been delivered to him. It seems to me that he's just as guilty of kidnapping.
Well, that's what George is saying, I think.
So,
either way, but the fact situation proposed does approach the completed crime certainly more than the usual kind of...
Yeah, but still, I'm just going beyond what John said. I think
we actually get the person He doesn't actually get tested.
What I'm saying is that by using the word intent here rather than purpose and looking to the definition of intent, the person acted with a conscious objective to cause a result, so it wouldn't make any difference whether the result occurred or not under the definition of intent. So we better straighten out the ambiguity that exists that Bob first brought up and we've been discussing on the use of this word purpose.
Okay, well, that's why I don't think it makes any difference whether we use intent or purpose.
Well, I'm not, I don't know.
I think purpose is probably the better word.
On reflection, I think maybe purpose is what we ought to use, because now looking back to second degree, under section 2, the mens rea is set out as with intent to interfere substantially. Then we get down to subsection 2, which sets out the defense there, and we use under sub C, his sole purpose is to assume control of that person. He still could have the intent to take the person from one place to another or to confine the person secretly. He could have those intents, but his purpose, his sole purpose, and even though he had this intent, was to assume control of the person. So certainly there we're not using that term as synonymous to intent. And
what do you think the difference between the word purpose and intent is?
Yeah, I don't think there's any difference except that you're not using the, you're not having two intents in
that's right,
the
yeah.
statute, you're having an intent and a purpose.
Well, I mean, I think it's bad draftsmanship. I think I cannot see the difference between the two words.
I mean, same thing.
The difference is that intent is well defined and purpose is not.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we create an ambiguity.
The word is by the courts.
I can see Don's point that you don't want to have an intent to intend to, you know, I mean, it's like a false sports story.
You got to intend to have a purpose.
Well, I think it would be bad draftsmanship after we've said with intent to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty. Then we go down and say his sole intent is to assume control of that person.
I do too. Jake, what do you think about it?
The way this is set up is sort of different. Intent seems to be what acts he intends to commit, and purposes
how he intends
the reasons why he does
for the whole project.
And also, there's the tie-in of purpose between one section and another.
I changed position three times during
I'll
the session.
I'll go along with purposes, but I don't know.
My initial, impression was it didn't make any difference, but the more I thought about it,
Senator Uturi once said, this is an historic occasion, never before have we discussed this so many times, not even then.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me a bit of when I watched George Joseph and Oscar Hallett argue to a great deal of questioning in the Supreme Court for a whole half hour each, where they couldn't agree on the difference between a prostitute and a common prostitute. Everybody knew what one was before they walked into the courtroom. Seven judges and two lawyers got their answers.
Unless somebody wishes to make a motion to make a change, let's go on to the next section. 4.
All right, now, custodial interference in the second degree. Under sub 1, we've been over this before. Now, here we have a relative situation. But a child has not reached his 16th birthday, and I might mention both of these, of course, the custodial interferences are crimes against the parent, interference with custody, rather than a crime against the person taken. Now, sub 1 is to confine it to those situations where there's a protracted period of time involved, intent to hold the child permanently. Yeah, excuse me, no.
Oh, go ahead. I have the same objections to hold them permanently protected as I had before on subsection 2 of section 2, the defense part. I've apparently been overruled. I think the words assume control are better words to be used here, better than hold them permanently or protected, period. Second objection is subsection 2 of section 4. I wonder how that really differs from section 2 again. I keep going back to that kidnapping in second degree, but...
Yeah, I could.
It's essentially the same crime. If it's designed as being a cop-out, then fine. I'm all in favor of them. We should have more of them in the statute. The district attorney should be more willing to do so.
Yeah, now, under sub 2 of section 4,
I'm not sure we've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish, because sub one was intended to apply to a relative situation where you'd have some place to go, even though the relative wouldn't be committed kidnapping in the second degree because of the provisions of the defense section, subsection. He might be violating subsection one of section four. And then two was to get at the less serious kinds of custodial interferences that would really amount to a cop-out situation from a second degree. But we didn't want to include within sub two a relative, but
we may have.
Yeah, we may have.
Well, isn't Dave's question really this, is that how does subsection four, section two really differ? Really different in any way from second degree kidnapping, except that in this case, there doesn't have to be a taking from one place to another or hiding them out somewhere.
Right. Which, in most interference with custodial.
Yeah, so, but how are they going to entice, how are you going to take, entice, or keep a person from their lawful custodian without in some way, shape, or form taking them from one place to another or secreting them someplace? And thereby committing second degree kidnapping.
You can stand in the door of
that word, but are we almost into a perky situation here?
Well, from the standpoint of the intent that's required, you need an intent to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty under kidnapping in the second degree, and we don't require any such intent. The custodial interference.
Point. This is where the boyfriend runs off with the daughter.
I'm going to move to strike the whole section.
Vicki and Sharon, but reading subsection one, is it clear enough what we say, being a relative of a person does not reach a 16th birthday? Make it clear enough that we're talking about the taking of a Latin person who is not reach a 16th
birthday.
It says the person.
Well,
it says that
person.
I just wonder.
Changes the to that, so I had to take care of that.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any problem with it? Does a relative who has reason to know that he has no legal right to do so, he takes him a child?
Well, this is partially
this is the
aimed
at situation.
This is aimed at result of an unhappy custody decision, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And in one case, he would know or would have reason to know.
I just don't think this is the area.
What do you have in mind, David?
I move to strike section four.
Well, way back when?
Nobody paid that. That's the second time you ever
mentioned it. <We'll, laughs> too bad. We'll entertain that in a minute when I get another vote.
First drafts on this.
Well, we might as well put the thing out in the open. What we're doing in section four is to have the situation that Harold talks about when somebody comes in the office and says, I'm going to take that kid and I'm going to Coos Bay with him. What's going to happen to him? And if you tell him, well, that's not a crime. Sorry, this is the father of the estranged wife, divorced wife. You say, well, that's all right. You know, there's no law against that. We may have a little civil problem, and she can find you down there. Get you back in the court and find you, get you served, and get the money together and defend it, and she can get the money, withhold her support for a while so you can't pay the lawyer. And it does help. You can tell them, yeah, there's a law against that. You can put in jail. Try to emphasize. If the 90% of the problem, that'll take care of it. The 10%ers are going to do it anyway.
And it helps from our standpoint to be able to just get on the phone and call the guy's attorney and say, look,
guess what's going to happen?
Have the kid back.
Well, and this works.
Now, our first two drafts of this in the subcommittee. The first two drafts of kidnapping on custodial interference required actual knowledge on the part of the defendant. And the subcommittee felt that was too restrictive, that there would be there would be instances, for example, where there was a court order. There was a court order, but the defendant had no actual knowledge. But he should have known. He had good reason to know because the order had been entered and filed. They felt that we shouldn't require actual knowledge, analogous to receiving stolen property, for example. That he,
He might not have actual knowledge that it's stolen, but he should have known. He had good reason to know it was stolen property. This was the reasoning they used here.
Isn't that maybe kind of backwards, John? In other words, shouldn't somebody who is going to physically take a child away, isn't he under some duty to find out if he does have that legal right or not? And if he not just define it as being a person who has no legal right to do so.
Well, I think there you get away from the problem, Jake. The typical situation is that the complaint is filed for divorce, there's a ex parte order signed, citing him in. In some cases, the judges in Washington County will sign an order ex parte, granting custody. If it hasn't been served, all he knows is the wife isn't there when he comes home. She's actually not at the lawyer's office, who's going towards the courthouse, picks the kid up and takes him to his mother. He doesn't really know. And I think that's being a little unfair. Once the order's been served on him, then he knows. And then he has reason to know.
What's the penalty for this crime?
It's a misdemeanor.
This would be a misdemeanor.
I'd be a little upset if it was going to be a felony, so you get the expedited situation.
Well, this is the point. It's a misdemeanor.
But you next expedited man under second degree of first degree, you take a
lot of the guy who's been put in jail for 1 day is just as bad shape as the guy who's been put in prison for a year. You know, I don't think that...
The other side of that, Bob, is that misdemeanors frequently give you the leverage to settle things unofficially.
I buy this thing of, I'd like to see something in the statute so the lawyer can say to his client, look, you do that, Buster, and you're in trouble. I'd like to have something in the statute so the district attorney can call a lawyer and say, look, have that kid back here or grandma back here by 7 o'clock in the morning or you're in trouble. Yeah, this is...
That's Eastern Oregon justice.
Yeah, that's the way they run things. That's the way it's done.
All right.
Get that cow back here.
I think as a just as a matter of semantics, somebody said, I think Carl suggested it, and I think it probably would be appropriate on the third line to substitute the word that for the word the. Yeah. Do you make that motion, Representative Haas?
Yes.
Okay. But he's heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried 1-0. Now.
Sounds like Jim Burns operating.
Tell me, Don. I think that this is necessary, but I'm concerned about the aunt situation, which would be covered by two. And tell me how subsection 2 of section 4 adds anything to our original intent. We're talking about custodial interference as being a lesser offense of kidnapping because it involves family situations. Now, sub 2 of 4 doesn't involve relatives. So, why would it not be more appropriate to delete sub 2 and permit the circumstance that's involved under those cases that would come under sub 2 to stand or fall in the face of the defense which exists in a kidnapping in the second degree?
Say that again.
I think what you mean, John, the reason is that what if there is a civil custody hearing going on in the meantime and the court finds that the wife is a tramp and is an active source of evil for the child and changes custody to the father who originally put the child on, or to the aunt who took the child on?
Well,
because this is a way to bounce him lightly.
Well, either one of those would be taken care of under one.
That'd be one, wouldn't it?
Any
relative.
That's a relative.
The non-relative would be taken care of under number 2. The only difference between 1 and 2 is that 1 involves a relative and a lengthy period of time, whereas 2 involves presumably a non-relative and any period of time, short or long.
No, that's correct. It operates, and it kind of scares me. And that is, the juvenile worker goes out and picks the kid up and comes back and files a petition. This is a non-relative.
By golly, now that you mention them, I think we ought to leave it in. I think some of those people should be prosecuted.
Let's make it a felony in the first degree. And
put facetious after your notes there.
Are we breaking up your record again?
No, I was going to ask that. Do we have any other section covering the equivalent of the present ORS statute dealing with enticement of a child? If so, this seems to be the substitute for it.
Yeah. It
would be the, that's right. I don't
even know what that law is. Aiding and abetting a runaway is some sort of call here.
What's that law, Jake?
163-640, Jake?
Well, I don't
care. That's taking away a child with intent to detain the parent.
Every person who maliciously, forcibly, or fraudulently takes or entices away any child or minor under the age of 16 years with intent to detain and conceal such child from his parent, guardian, or other person, etc. Having lawful charge of a child shall be punished. And that's 25 years. Or life.
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning to Lee earlier, that we've softened this considerably.
Yes.
Right. I think perhaps the Attorney General should prosecute these type of cases. Can we write that?
Oh, I'm going to go back and rewrite your speech of last week. Add these.
Well, wait a
minute. Leaving the local DA's needs all the help.
Sub 2. What have you got an 18-year-old girl? Who goes off and shacks up with something.
19-year-old boy.
Make that a crime?
Well, he entices her away from her parents.
Or just takes. He doesn't have to entice. She wants to go, and so he takes.
This is where the chauffeur runs away with the heiress situation.
Yeah, I just wonder whether we shouldn't have the 16-year-old limitation.
It doesn't have the 16-year-old limitation in sub 2. And sub 2 eliminates relatives, it eliminates 16-year-olds.
And it eliminates intent.
And it eliminates permanently or protracted, and it eliminates a tenth.
And my question was, why not just delete it?
Well, I think it's one of those real nice broad provisions you need in there.
Oh, Christ. Well, now as we mentioned on page 8, subsection 2.
For the courts to do.
Bob wants to leave it to the discretion of the DA whether some action be prosecuted or not, and the rest of you don't trust us.
Well, if I can eliminate certain counties from that provision, I'll go for it. Define it by judicial districts, okay.
Well, now, sub 2 was intended not to cover just the child situation, but the case
any
of incompetence of any kind who would be in the custody, the lawful custody of another person.
Would it do violence to it if you did put the 16-year age factor
in sub 2?
Does a 20-year-old boy... Is
I think it
then eliminates the crime for anybody under over the age of 16.
Well, how about Lee's example?
18-year-old
boy, 18-year-old girl.
Romeo
and Juliet. Okay. No,
they're going to Las Vegas. Well,
the Mann Act.
What's the situation? Somebody came into my office the other day and had a 15-year-old girl that was pregnant. The mother of the boy came in. The boy is 18. They want to get married. They couldn't get married here, so come hell or high water, they were going to get married, and so I made arrangements with a lawyer I know in Reno, and we got judicial consent in Nevada, and they were married in Nevada. Now, the mother of the boy and the boy and the girl flew down to Reno for the marriage. It happened in this case that the mother of the girl went too. But assuming that the mother of the girl was opposed...
String her up.
Both the boy and his mother would be have committed the crime of custodial interference in the second degree, right?
If the mother of the girl opposed it, the boy would probably be in the can for statutory rape anyway.
Yeah.
So
under our new code.
Well,
four years of each other, the ages obviously are, there's no rape involved. Is that right?
Pardon me, I didn't hear that.
It's coming on a new sex article, but there wouldn't be any statutory rape in this situation, as the facts are posed, because they're within 4 years of each other, and the girl's over 10 or 12, whatever that minimum age is.
18 and the girl was 18 in this, yeah, it wouldn't be rape under.
It wouldn't be statutory.
It wouldn't be statutory rape under that.
Well, what do you think?
It wouldn't be statutory rape under a present law. She's 18.
No, she was 15.
She was 15. He was 18.
I thought the hypothetical was 18.
How does a new bar must have been put at age?
Well, now. You see, what we were trying to do under one section here was to cover not just the cases of children, but the cases of other incompetence.
Of course, it's senile adults.
Yeah.
Now this is patterned after the New York draft, which combines the two. Now, the Model Penal Code has a separate subsection on custody of committed persons, and. Provides for misdemeanor penalties for taking away a